When you hear anything about unmanned aircraft, chances are your first thought might be drones. There's plenty of debate about using unmanned aircraft for spying and lethal attacks. But there are other uses for unmanned aircraft, and that's what we're going to look at right now. The University of Michigan is teaming up with the Michigan Unmanned Aerial System Center Project in Alpena. That's on the eastern side of the mitten part of our state, right on the coast of Lake Huron. The Michigan Economic Development Corporation recently pledged $500,000 to the research test site and fly zone for unmanned aircraft systems. My colleague Lester Graham spoke with Professor Ella Atkins with the Department of Aerospace Engineering at the University of Michigan.
Let's talk about these drones. I've been told these things have been around for a long time. We had unmanned aircraft as far back as World War I. So we're just now getting to some civil and commercial applications of these vehicles. Why is it taking so long?
Well, when the unmanned aircraft were first used, they were really a way of testing some technologies that might not have been ready to be sufficiently reliable to put people on board. So they had remote-controlled drones long ago where they could put some maybe novel shapes of airfoils, engines, structure that they hadn't tested before. And then from an aerospace perspective, they could get some flight test experience and learn that they were safe or not safe.
Sure, without risking a test pilot.
Right. So then that matured so that by the 1950s, there was an emerging model aircraft community where anyone ranging from a young child to any adult could, for a reasonable amount of money, purchase the wood and other components that was necessary to build an airplane and fly it without paying the high cost of renting an aircraft and then learning to be a pilot inside that aircraft. Since then, that's been very popular.
So you've been looking at different ways to power and different shapes and different designs of these aircraft and different uses. I see your example of the model aircraft. I can't imagine how I would use one of these craft of any kind for myself.
Well, there's all kinds of uses. First of all, as someone who tries to educate students in aerospace, a really important thing that's emerging in terms of education is get the hands on what they're actually going to be using. For the students here at the University of Michigan to have the opportunity to put together, to design, build, and fly something that is reasonable for them to actually go through that whole process in a year is just an incredible experience that they couldn't get were it not possible for these remote-controlled aircraft to be flown. Further, if you have a kid and you go to Toys R Us now, there's an entire shelf lined with things ranging from helicopters to quad rotors to fixed-wing aircraft that really give people an appreciation for what it's like to have a radio, something that flies. You get a lot better understanding of how these kinds of robotic systems work at a very young age, which I think also encourages students to study math and physics and all of those somewhat painful subjects that would lead to careers in engineering and science when they grow up. In terms of household uses, other things, these vehicles are so cheap. You get a helicopter, you put a little camera on it. So many people are kind of afraid that they're going to be used for bad purposes, but there's all the good purposes. For example, let's say you had a storm the night before and you wanted to see if anything happened to your roof, shingles or gutters or anything like that. With a very cheap camera and a small helicopter and a transmitter, you can get out, take some video that prevents you from having to climb on the roof of your house to test that very, to check out that very thing.
That'd be especially useful if you'd been imbibing some Michigan beers that day. You might not want to be on a ladder. So you have been looking at different uses. You've designed an unmanned seaplane. What kind of use would an unmanned seaplane have?
So we worked with DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency in Washington. That was a military type of project. And so they were interested in using as the seaplane in the open water and collecting data for whatever purposes they had. But there are lots of domestic uses as well. In the Great Lakes, there are a lot of concerns with what global warming is doing with bacteria that can migrate, that may be present, may not be present with algae blooms and their impact on the local environment. Taking a boat out is a fairly well understood, but somewhat costly effort, whereas if you had a seaplane, the idea with the flying fish seaplane that we developed was that it used solar energy harvesting, which is a very green way of collecting energy, to recharge itself. It could remain in the open water for extended periods of time with whatever instrumentation it had, for example, to collect data on water chemistry, biologics, and so forth, and to transmit that data back to whatever team was interested in having it. It could fly between locations and did not require the support of a boat. So it really served several purposes. One, it was economical in the sense that you could drop it and leave it, so you didn't have to have a support ship there. And second of all, it did not burn fossil fuels. It was an electric-powered and then solar energy harvesting seaplane.
Yeah, I can imagine. I've been out on the University of Minnesota's Great Blue Heron out in Lake Superior, and that's a big ship, a lot of personnel, and a lot of fuel, I imagine. So I've looked through some presentations that talk about civil applications, border management, explosive detection systems, forest fire monitoring, commercial applications like power line monitoring and agriculture. I mean, there are a lot of different uses. Are there a lot of different designs that would be suitable for different applications like that?
There are kind of two classes of designs that have been considered seriously. One is the rotor design, where you have either a traditional helicopter or a quad rotor, which is four rotors or some variant on that. Those vehicles can be flown indoors if they're small. They're very maneuverable, and so they can fly in and among objects as well as fly from point to point. Those are appropriate for applications where you're flying at low altitude. So, for example, if you want to inspect a bridge by flying under it as opposed to just flying over it, a rotary wing vehicle that was small would be very appropriate for that. It would also reduce risk to personnel that would normally have to perhaps scale down on ropes to get that kind of inspection access. The fixed-wing aircraft is more efficient. You can go longer on a fixed amount of energy. So for applications like border patrol, pipeline inspection, and power line inspection, you want to have as much efficiency as possible. You can fly faster, less energy, and still collect the data that you want.
So we can see a lot of good uses, but I can also see a lot of misuses with something like this. Industrial espionage. For my business, let's pick on the news business a little bit. I can see, you know, maybe flying along the Kalamazoo River to see how far an oil spill is damaging the environment. But I can also see TMZ using one of these things to go over a private beach to see Kate Upton and whether she's topless or not. You know, it seems like there's a lot of potential both ways with a tool like this.
I think there are a few things we need to separate. First of all, we need to separate safety from privacy. What you're talking about is privacy, not safety. And there we have to recognize that loss of privacy is a concern no matter how you want to get your cameras where they shouldn't be. Maybe the aircraft provides a new way to invade someone's privacy. But the fact is, when you mention the word paparazzi, you have some pretty horrible images that come to mind now where they use cars and other means to really harass people pretty substantially. So I would say if Kate Upton is on a public beach or even a private beach, you have to watch out for all those people in their boats and cars and other devices trying to get their camera shots now. I think, again, from the safety perspective, people tend to fear flying more than they fear driving. Maybe it's evolutionary. In this case, what we're really talking about for things like traffic monitoring, law enforcement, and so on, a lot of those applications already have manned helicopters that are doing the jobs. If you look at safety, the unmanned small vehicle is actually going to be safer because it has less mass, doesn't have all the fuel on board. If something does happen to it, it's not going to hurt the people and property on the ground as much as something large and manned is going to hurt those same people or the same property.
I want to talk about one other thing. You know, let's say I own a large farm or any kind of private property, and I see one of these things over my property. They're on my private property, right? I mean, you can't fly something over my private property, can you?
So the federal government has issued authorization to the FAA to regulate all navigable airspace. The definition of navigable airspace is basically anything you can fly in. What that means is that the FAA has been authorized to regulate the air that you breathe on your property to some extent, this sounds ridiculous, but and there is an open question of whether that actually violates our personal freedoms to do what we want on our property. I think there's going to be some discussion over the next few years of what it means to own property, not just the land that you stand on and the trees that you have and can do whatever you want with, but also the air that's immediately above your property. Certainly, when you think about commercial transport, general aviation, there's a certain low altitude that you really don't want those things flying in because it's unsafe. We would all be very nervous if a 747 flew 100 feet above our rooftop unless they were right next to the approach or departure from an airport. So to some extent, we're not going to cause any interruption in air transportation or even the freedom of general aviation to navigate through the skies as they please if we separate the low-altitude air that we breathe from all of the rest of the airspace that we enjoy now for commercial and general aviation. So I think that's something that we need to consider more.
So we're going to have to look at that and see if there should be regulations on exactly where and how you do this. I can't imagine my neighbor would be thrilled if I were hovering over his house with a little unmanned aircraft. We've been talking to Ella Atkins of the University of Michigan's Department of Aerospace Engineering about unmanned aircraft and the future of that. And it sounds like a lot of potential and a lot of concerns we have to look at in the future. Thank you very much for coming in.
Absolutely. You're welcome.